Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to this talking book session of excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. We are now at chapter 17, titled, Two Preeminent Devotees. It begins with the following quote once again from Sri Aurobindo. Quote, I might have to speak of laws and forces not recognized by reason or physical science. Unquote. Today, we shall listen to Mr. Moffat's narration of the experiences of two eminent devotees, both well established in their respective professions, both men of great repute in the society, and both with a proper scientific background. What were their experiences, and why did Mr. Moffat choose these two men over many others to showcase Bhagwan's divinity? We will soon discover answers to these questions. Today, we bring you to the first half of this chapter, which profiles the experiences of Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao. In the next episode, we will conclude this chapter with the experiences of a scientist, Dr. S. Bhagwantam.
A man who had quite a distinguished career in public life was the late Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao, who died in September 1967. The obituary notices in the press at the time stated that he had held several important positions in public affairs and administration. He was, for instance, during the early 1950s, chief minister of the old Hyderabad state, and as such helped create the modern state of Andhra Pradesh in 1956. In later years, he held office as governor of two different Indian states, Kerala and Uttar Pradesh. The newspapers, however, did not mention what, to Dr. Ramakrishna himself, was by far the most important factor in his life, his discipleship of Sai Baba. The little doctor, as we often called him because of his diminutive stature, was a first-class linguist and often acted as interpreter for Sai Baba. It was in this capacity that I first met him in Mr. G. Venkateshwara Rao's house in Madras. Here is one remarkable story that he told me. In 1961, when he was governor of Uttar Pradesh, he and his wife were traveling by fast train from Bareilly to Nainital in the Himalayas. They were the only occupants of their first-class carriage, and the train had no corridor by which anyone could enter or leave their compartment. At about 11 p.m., the governor noticed some sparks coming from the electric fan. These rapidly increased in volume until he and his wife grew quite alarmed, thinking the compartment would catch fire any minute. He looked for a cord or bell by which he could sound the alarm and stop the train, but could find none. It began to look as if the governor and his lady might be burned to death before anyone learned of their plight. There was nothing that they could do but pray, which they did wholeheartedly. Then there was a knock on one of the outer doors. Very surprising this was, because the doors simply led to the open air through which the train was roaring at a good speed. The doctor walked over and opened the door. In from the dark night stepped a man dressed in the khaki uniform of an electric wireman. Without a word, this man went to work on the faulty fan from which the sparks were now flying, like chaff from a threshing floor. About a quarter of an hour later, the electrician said to them, "There's no danger now. You can go to bed and sleep." With this, he sat down on the floor near the door. The governor's wife lay down on her bed and closed her eyes. But she kept half opening them to watch the man by the door because, as she told her husband later, she thought that anyone who risked his life to walk along the running board of a fast-moving train was probably a burglar, who, when they were both asleep, would rob them. The governor himself, with no such suspicions, was deeply engrossed in a book. Suddenly, he was startled to feel the touch of the workman's hand and hear his voice asking quietly if the doctor would mind closing the carriage door after him, because he was now leaving. The little doctor was astonished that the electrician did not wait until the next station before leaving. But before he could say anything, the khaki-clad figure had opened the door, and the night air was whistling in to the carriage. Dr. Ramakrishna Rao jumped up and stepped to the open doorway in time to see the man stand a moment on the running board, then vanish into the darkness. It was all rather mystifying. How in the first place did he know that the fan was giving trouble? How did he get to the carriage, and why did he choose to leave and make his way along the running board of this swaying, fast-moving express when he could have easily waited until the next stop? He either liked living dangerously or he was simply crazy. But in either case, he must also be clairvoyant to know about the fault in the electric fan. With a mental shrug, the little doctor lay down to sleep. About a month after this incident, the governor was again traveling, this time by the aeroplane that was kept for his official use. With him on this occasion, besides his wife and the pilot, were his ADC, his personal assistant, and the pilot's wife. They were flying from Kanpur to Benares. Above Benares, the governor noticed that they seemed to be circling a very long time over the airfield before landing. He asked if there was anything amiss and was informed that the undercarriage was stuck. The wheels would not come down. Furthermore, they were now almost out of petrol. With Dr. Ramakrishna Rao's agreement, the pilot decided to attempt a crash landing on the grass of the airfield. He signaled the ground to this effect. The fire engines were brought out and everything made ready for the attempt. All knew, of course, that it was a highly dangerous operation, and both the little doctor and his wife sent fervent prayers to their Gurudev, Sai Baba, for his much-needed protection. Perhaps the ADC was praying too, for he was also a devotee of Sai Baba. Like the doctor, he wore on his hand a talisman, a ring that had been materialized by Baba. The pilot knew this and, as a last resort before trying a crash landing, asked the ADC to try his hand at working the lever for releasing the jammed undercarriage. The ADC placed his hand on the lever and pressed as directed. The undercarriage came down without any difficulty. They were able to make a normal landing. The next day, Mrs. Ramakrishna Rao, knowing that Baba was at Bangalore in the south, phoned him from Benares in order to thank him for his grace and protection, which she believed had saved them from their perilous predicament in the plane. She found, not at all to her surprise, that he knew all about the event and mentioned details. Then he remarked, "But you have said nothing about the train incident." "What train incident, Swami?" she asked, for it had slipped from her mind. "Why, when the fan was almost on fire and you thought I was a thief?" Baba laughed. Dr. Ramakrishna Rao was sure the train story could not have reached Baba in the ordinary way, because neither he nor his wife had talked to anyone about it. They had refrained from mentioning it on the following morning, not wanting to upset any of their staff. Then the incident had faded into the background of their busy lives. Nothing superhuman that Sai Baba did could ever surprise the little doctor. He had, through the years, seen and experienced so much. For example, when he was governor of Kerala and was entertaining Baba and some devotees at the guest house in Trivandrum in 1962, his wife had arranged a dinner party one evening for 60 people. But when Baba is around, crowds have a habit of multiplying their size, and about 150 people turned up. It was impossible to obtain extra food at the time. Mrs. Ramakrishna Rao became very worried and asked Baba what she should do about it. "Feed them all," Baba told her. "There will be enough. Don't worry." So the extra places were set and the whole crowd sat down. Baba moved among the guests and servers, blessing the food, seeing that all were happy and turning the meal, as always, into a banquet. No one went short because of the extra 90 mouths to be fed. Somehow, Baba increased the food and there was enough for all. I knew that it was on this visit to the south that one of the dramatic miracles described in N. Kasturi's book took place. A number of Baba's disciples were walking with him on the sands of Kanyakumari, where three seas meet and play around the southernmost tip of India. Suddenly, a kingly wave swept high up the beach around Baba's feet, and on receding, it left about his ankles a magnificent necklace, 108 fine pearls on a thread of gold. I have spoken to a number of men, including Dr. Sitaramaya, who were present and witnessed the arrival of this treasure from the deep, and I asked Dr. Ramakrishna Rao if he had been there as well. He replied that, unfortunately, official duties had taken him elsewhere that day. In fact, he was meeting Dr. S. Radhakrishnan, who had just been appointed President of India. But he said a number of his friends and acquaintances, including the Chief of Security Police, were with Baba on the beach and saw it happen. They described the event to him on the following day, and he was shown the pearl necklace. Baba later gave this to an old devotee whom the doctor knew. It was while he was still governor of Uttar Pradesh that Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao saw the miraculous events that moved him most deeply. In the summer of 1961, Sai Baba with a party of devotees was touring in the north and decided to visit the famous temple at Badrinath high in the Himalayas. Dr. Ramakrishna joined the party at Haridwar on the Ganges for the 182-mile mountain trek to Badrinath. The devotees say that the object of Sai Baba's journey was not only to take them to this holy place, but to reinfuse it with spiritual efficacy. It was established some 1200 years ago by Adi Shankara, one of the foremost spiritual leaders of all time. He it was who brought the Upanishads into the light of day from where they had been collecting dust for centuries in caves and monasteries. At Joshi Math, he wrote his celebrated commentaries on the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutras, thus making these spiritual classics accessible and intelligible to a wider and ever-widening audience. Adi Shankara not only traveled all over India and taught the people, but organized and established centers in the north, south, east, and west, which he hoped would remain as beacons of light to carry on his work after he had gone. Badrinath was one of those spiritual power points. But in the course of 12 centuries, albeit millions of devout pilgrims had brought about their adoration and veneration there, the power was certain to run down. The life was bound to ebb from the ancient form. Even though a particular priestly caste may not be corrupt, it has most of the human weaknesses and cannot maintain the high level set by a godman such as Adi Shankara. The only thing that can recharge the spiritual battery of such a place is the presence and power of another godman. However, there appeared to be an obstacle in the way. By tradition, the doctor told me, the only persons ever permitted inside the temple Sanctum Sanctorum to perform puja were the members of a special sect of Kerala Brahmins. This caste of priests had held the position and exclusive rights since the days of Adi Shankara. The request of Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao, the governor of their state, counted for naught. They had heard of Sai Baba. The miracle worker who some said was an avatar, a God-man, but they could not make an exception even for him. God himself in human form would not be allowed to enter here. For what human eyes can read the credentials of divinity? No matter, Baba said, let them keep to their traditions. However, before some 200 people outside the temple, he materialized a statue of Vishnu. This was about 10 inches high and was, it is said, a replica of the big idol within the temple. With another wave of his hand, he produced a silver tray on which he placed the little Vishnu idol. Then in the same way, he created a 1,000-petaled lotus of gold. Everyone gasped at its beauty, and while they were wondering what it was for, Baba waved his hand again to produce a Shivalingam. This, some 3 or 4 inches in height, and made of a beautiful crystal material, he placed in the center of the golden lotus. With the idol, lotus and lingam on the silver tray, Baba and his followers came away from the temple to the guest house where they were staying. There, while they all sang bhajan songs, Baba carried the lingam around and showed it to everyone, pointing out the beauty of the material and the form of an eye which was mysteriously incorporated inside it. Then Baba materialized a silver vessel full of holy water, 108 bilwa leaves of gold, which fell in a shower from his hand onto the tray, and a heap of tomb flowers, with the dew still fresh upon them. These are described as tiny bits of fragrant fluff plucked from 100 little tropical plants. All of these were materials for ritualistic worship. Baba performed Abhisheka, and then, in his presence, N. Kasturi writes, the puja was performed on behalf of all present, by Dr. B. Ramakrishna Rao, appropriate mantrams being recited by the devotees. Afterwards, Baba handed all the materialized items to the governor's lady, Mrs. Ramakrishna Rao, instructing her to take good care of them, because she would be held responsible if anything was lost. The poor woman felt very apprehensive about such a responsibility, as well she might. She locked the precious articles in a cupboard in a bedroom and kept the key on her person. Sometime later, Baba asked her to bring the lingam. Unlocking the cupboard, she found that it was missing. Everything else was there, but the lingam had vanished. In great consternation, she hurried to Baba and reported the loss. At first he scolded her for not taking proper care, but then he laughed and said he was only teasing her. He explained to all present that he had sent the lingam back to the place from where it had been apported by his power to the base of the idol in the temple. This Netralingam from Kailasha, as he called it, had been placed in a secret niche in the Holy of Holies long ago by Adi Shankara himself. There it had rested through the long centuries until that day, June 17, 1961, when he had brought it out to consecrate it anew and recharge it with spiritual potency. So the work he came for was done in spite of the hampering traditions of the place. Baba later asked for the other articles in the cupboard. He distributed the 108 gold leaves among the 200 or more people around him, and as usual, there were enough for all. Mrs. Ramakrishna Rao was then greatly rewarded for those few moments of anguish she had suffered at the disappearance of the lingam. She was presented with the materialized idol of Vishnu, the golden lotus, and the silver tray on which they both stood. The doctor told me that these sacred objects were still in his puja room at Hyderabad, where the regular family worship was held.
Well, that was in short the Ramakrishna Rao family's experiences. In the second segment of this reading, the author Mr. Howard Murfitt introduces us to a skeptical scientist and his eventual journey to spirituality. Dr. S. Bhagwantam, a scientist of high caliber, was former director of the All India Institute of Science in Bangalore. He held the prominent position of scientific advisor to the Ministry of Defense in Delhi and was very well known in scientific circles outside India when Mr. Murfitt had met him. Please do join us as we bring you the interesting experiences of Dr. Bhagwantam with Sri Satya Sai Baba. Well, that is all from us today in this reading book session. More when we meet next time. Till then, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.